Hi, welcome to the Dark Runners podcast. This is episode 25. The date is the, I don't know, because my watch has just updated to tell me about all the fun activities that I will not actually partake in. It's 8th of February. Yes, it is. So welcome to the show eventually. This is another daft chat as we've actually just skipped all of our training, also our actual runs for February. I'm here with Jamie as always. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, everyone.
How's it going? How is it going with you, Jamie? How has your training been this week?
Pretty bad. Cool. So I actually totaled up my mileage or kilometerage, how you say it, and I think it's been pretty bad. So first week of training from around the 18th of January, I'd done about 26, 27 kilometers over the week, which is mostly just a couple of weekend runs. And then the next week, we obviously had our ultra marathon, which was my sole run of the week. So I actually managed to hit my mileage target and exceed it just because of that one run. the next week, I did 20K, which again is less than half what I should have done. And then this week, I've done 5 so far. So I'm currently psyching myself up to either go today for a 30K run or tomorrow. It's probably gonna be tomorrow now.
There's a lot of data there. I'm not quite sure how to process that. Well, like I need to compare it to. I'm gonna load my my weekly and monthly thing up. I'm not gonna do that.
I'm blinding you with data. Am I?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sort of blind with data. I mean, because. Yeah, so I mean, today I was like you. I think do a 30K run. I mean, to be honest, I was thinking maybe should push it to 40 just because I haven't actually done any running in quite a while, or any significant running.
The 50K race a couple of weeks ago, obviously.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Other than that, yeah.
I like that. Nothing of significance.
That's how Alex rolls. It's like, 30K. I'll just stick an extra cheeky 10K in then because I just haven't quite run enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's right. I mean, especially when we were chatting last week about the amount of distance we're supposed to be doing per week. It's just, I don't think I'm anywhere near that. And on the Monday, actually, I did run to the office, and that took me about 16 kilometers. So that felt good to have done. I was like, kicked off the week well. And then did no running after that at all, and have skipped my run this morning because I couldn't be bothered. I'll just go to the gym instead, because I hadn't been to the gym in like pretty much best part of a month properly. It's quite good.
Was it leg day for the gym?
Well, no, because I thought I'd do a marathon tomorrow. So
fair enough.
Go on, sorry.
So every day is technically leg day, obviously, but that aside, what did you get up to? Anything interesting?
No, just like sort of faffed around with a bit of pull-ups, a bit of bench press and shoulder press and that kind of stuff, just to make sure my arms still work, because they've been fairly ignored. I mean, apart from shoveling food into my face over Christmas.
sounds like they did some sterling work.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's pulling a lot of weight. I think I may actually have some kind of like tennis elbow or something, maybe from just from lifting all those mince pies.
So there was actually something amusing I read in an article. Sorry, are we doing news now? We're going to stick to training. But I'll do a brief highlight. But they were saying exactly what you needed to do to burn off your Christmas dinner.
Oh really?
It's quite a lot, obviously, because of you and the amount that you've obviously shuffled. That is that like a slightly less then in that context, because you've been working out your guns while eating.
I think there must be some cardio burn in there, right? I mean, you really turn up to perform at a Christmas dinner, don't you? So Christmas Day style is like, okay, let's get downstairs and crack open the sherry or alcohol of choice.
Nice.
We got a full day of guilt-free eating adventures to be had. And, I think there's some cardio effort in there as well. Running down the stairs, getting to the fridge, going from the fridge to the table. I mean,
fabulous.
Yeah, so I think maybe how many hours or whatever was he saying you needed to do to burn off that one particular meal, which I'm assuming is nowhere near actually close to the amount that I would eat at Christmas dinner.
So saying a 10K run every other day for about 2 weeks.
10K run every other day for 2 weeks. So what's that? 14. So seven 10K runs. So just a 50K then.
Sounds like that. It sounds pretty worth it, really.
I mean, 50K and you know, chuck into the 2 10Ks for a warm up and cool down. You're done, right?
So, yeah, easy.
Yeah. So what's the big deal? What's the big deal, guys?
Yeah, we should do that. So Jamie and Axe's Christmas program, where we advise on how to kind of make sure you keep the weight off while you're shoveling the food.
Yeah, I mean, if you just did a 50K run, maybe from cold Christmas,
yeah,
at the morning of Christmas, and then you don't even have to worry about it then, do you?
No.
Apparently you've set yourself up right.
Do you do it before you eat? Because that way your body's more kind of keen on getting kind of food in. Maybe this should be like a pre-Christmas thing. Or is that a bad idea?
I mean, I would normally do it before because I don't like eating after. Sorry, eating before a workout. So, yeah, I'd do it before. Maybe actually during. Maybe instead of running with your pork pies, what you should be running with is turkey and stuffing.
For full Christmas dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. Go on.
That works for me. I really like Yorkshire puddings. That's another thing I can have during the runs. Yorkshire puddings. Why didn't I think of that?
What, stuffed for something?
Yes, they're quite light and fluffy, aren't they? So I could have like some kind of, I could wrap it around like an energy gel.
Or cranberry sauce.
Or cranberry sauce. Yes.
So yeah, I mean, yeah. Some salted roast potato in the middle there. Onto something, mate.
Excellent. That's a bit of a tangent, but basically in summer, I guess the training's not going great. But
but apparently the nutrition's going great. Like, absolutely perfectly.
Yeah. I also did. I did a 5K run, obviously on Friday. But I also went to the gym. I did a
obviously.
Yeah, I did a grit strength class. Have you ever done one of those before?
You know what? I haven't done grit strength, but I know it's by the Les Mills company, isn't it? So I've done body pump. I used to quite enjoy that. So I know how to do a clean and press, and then what is it called? A clean and press? It's an abomination of a clean and press, really, in those Les Mills classes, because it's just, you know, lightweight and you're flinging it in the air. Yeah, I presume you do that in grit strength as well.
Yeah, I did quite a lot of clean pressing, and I found you have to do it quite quickly. You've only got a certain amount of time, so I really struggled getting my coordination together. It was also a bit mildly irritated because everyone else in the class was kind of female and half my size and doing more weight than I was, so it's actually quite irritating.
So is this a new segment we need to do, where it's actually, let's forget about running 100 kilometers. Let's just get make Jamie able to be the strongest woman in the gym.
It's a lot of work to be done before I get to that heady height. But now I think it's probably good to do those kind of things, doesn't it? Because I think you do need to do some strengthening. So I imagine, obviously, in normal kind of running, strengthening exercises probably don't involve cleaning press, but. I think it all contributes to getting kind of healthy and fit, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, a clean and press is a pretty good full body movement in terms of, you know.
If you do it right. So yeah, again, I don't think I was doing it right.
If you learn how to do it right, then maybe it would be a good exercise.
So in essence, I think I was just doing shoulder lifts and then moving my legs around a little bit when the instructor looked at me.
Make it look like
I'm trying. Stop embarrassing me.
Okay, cool. So we'll work on that. We'll teach Jamie how to clean and press day.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yes, please.
I mean, you can do these Olympic lift sessions where you get taught how to do all the Olympic lifts properly. But then if he turned up the body pump and tried to do a grit strength and did a Olympic lift style clean and press, it might be more of a clean and jerk, actually. It's the Olympic one, isn't it? Yeah, just smash out a proper cleaning jerk. Make sure you grunt really hard as well. That'd be hilarious.
This is definitely going to end well.
Damn it, Jamie! Don't be such a cleaning jerk.
Like, I don't even know what that means, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I mean that's pretty good training. I mean, I didn't say, you know, did a bit of cycling this week as always, but this is the spin classes, which you know, just used to excuse my cake eating at breakfast. I mean, I didn't do a day like last week where you know, I just ate cake all day, to be fair. So I mean, I guess that's an improvement.
I mean, it depends what you get, as we discussed. Well, actually, how many calories would you need to burn to get rid of the cake? Is that like even more 10K runs?
Well, it depends what the cake is, isn't it? It's like, well, it's a proper cake. At least 200K.
How many calories did we burn doing that kind of 50K run? It's actually, maybe we should have some basis. Whenever we eat something, it's like, well, this is 0.2 of an ultra.
Yeah, maybe that's better. Actually, rather than using kilocalories as a measure, it's purely based on Yorkshire puds.
Yeah. Yes.
I've burnt 2 Yorkshire puds today.
Okay, this could work. I'm actually going to work this out. So 4,612 calories I burned during the 51K run. So again, this is going on a tangent.
Say again, I missed that number. 300 what?
I've lost the page now. I think it's 4,612.
That was an old day where you did that 50K.
Presumably. Yeah, just that 50K.
Just the 50K, you burnt 4K calories.
Is that right?
Well, I mean, what did I burn? I think I was more like 2.5, 3K.
I'm fatter than you.
Well, that's not, 3,800. So I guess, that makes sense. I thought I'd burn a lot less during that. But actually, yeah, that would include your paid as well.
Sweet. So calories in a Yorkshire pudding is 200 for every calorie. So that's, this is definitely efficient use of our time. So that's quite a few, isn't it? So is that 23 Yorkshire puddings? Well, that's a win. There we go.
So yeah, okay. So if you actually pack 23 Yorkshire puddings at the next 50K we do, I think that would work well.
Yeah, definitely. So training. So I guess in terms of ambitions for training, some more spinning, more running. We should probably do some running. Yeah,
do some actual training. Yeah, as we always say, really. One day we'll get around to it.
One day I'm going to get good at this running stuff, and then, then no one will laugh at me anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it'll work.
Unless I cleaning jerk.
Yeah, I mean, there is that thing about the whole it's not just about the hard activities, the running and the cycling and the lifting. You should also do some recovery stuff. Like the same things, but lighter. Yoga is quite good. I just never really ever get to a yoga class. So.
Oh, yeah, you're still doing that hot yoga. Have you stopped?
No, I haven't stopped. It's just fitting it in, really. And because most of my mornings I'm doing the activities, and I always find going, especially to get into that, to one where it's not quite on my path, as it were.
Yeah.
When it's en route, it's quite easy to, just drop in on the way home or whatever, which is quite good for, my route home. I've got a few of my gyms I can drop into. But the hot yoga studio isn't particularly on route. Unless I went kind of an odd way, but then it's not en route anymore, is it?
sounds like a bit of a logistical nightmare, Alex.
Oh, yeah. You've got another half it. Oh, my gosh. My life is such a struggle. No, I mean, it's just organization and trying to fit everything in at the end of the day, isn't it? I've been foam rolling my calves quite a bit because of my Achilles has been really tight, which is a bit irritating, but it hasn't snapped, touch wood. So I could just keep running and ignoring that.
So that foam rolling stuff, like I said this to you before, but I don't really, so I'm not great at recovery. You know, usually after I finish a race, I tend to have something drink or I'll stretch, but you know, when you stretch, you don't really mean it. It's like, I can,
yeah, exactly. I'm just bending over and looking at my feet because
exactly.
I don't want to do it till it actually pulls or feels tight or anything. I'm just going to let you look over.
Traditionally, like when I was 30, I did this 30 things to do before you're 30, and one of it was touching my toes. So I'm really bad at stretching.
Did you make that goal?
I did. That was one of the only ones I did.
Hey.
So I can't do it now, though. So I mean, that's gone. Those gains are gone. So I don't know what are you supposed to do with foam rollers?
It's basically like a massage thing. So you've got foam rollers, or you've got like these balls that you can use, which, you know, you can use they're always going on about lacrosse balls, I guess, because they're from the US. But anyway, kind of like a firm ball you can roll on as well. Yeah. So ultimately the idea is to try and find the knots in your muscle and work those out with the rollers. So, you know, you take a nice thick fat muscle, and then you put that on the roller and you roll over it until you find a spot where it, you know, you can feel like a pain point. Not pain point, it's the wrong word, but because you've got like a knot in there, and you can roll over it and it's kind of just the knot out. So similar to it's basically self massaging.
Cool.
The PG version. So yeah, it works quite well. I mean, there's various ways you can do it, and there's plenty of material out there on how to do a roll, as it were. Although one thing I find a bit confusing. So I actually had a link from, actually I won't name the source because I'm not sure whether it's good or not. But when I was shown how to do foam rolling, one of the things that people will do is the we're going to roll our IT band, which was let's all lie on our sides on top of a roller and roll up and down. But actually, that doesn't really make sense in terms of, foam rolling is working the knots out. But if you're rolling your IT band, then that's not a muscle. That's a, basically, I think it's a tendon that runs down from your, I can't really remember what the muscle's called, but you've got this little muscle on your hip. And that connects to around your knee. Down the side. So it's like, well, if you roll a tendon, then it's not releasing anything because you're not helping, you're just putting pressure on a tendon. So I was told essentially that's a stupid move to do and you shouldn't do it. But you should be obviously doing other big muscles in your legs. So you've got your big four quadriceps at the front and your hamstrings at your back. As well as your glutes and that, which, I mean, rolling on your glutes, I mean, it's a bit better to use the balls or whatever. So you gotta really put your ass in those balls to
There it is. There it is. Right. So you recommend that I get a foam roller then? So if I'm going to be doing more running, I might need to get some knots out. So foam roller is good for that.
Pretty much. I mean, I purchased one years ago. Quite a stiff one. There's also, you get different softer ones as well. So like another point to avoid, which you'll see people do at the gym or whatever, is rolling their lower back, which is something you shouldn't do because you can do your upper back, it's fine, but your lower back is just an exposed spine. So it's quite a unstable area to roll over, even if you are using a softer foam roller. Whereas if you do your upper back, you're supported by all the structure of the rib cage and upper body musculature. So unless you've got an incredible core strength along your lower spine, which you probably shouldn't do it because you're putting your spine in a compromised position.
Fair enough.
So if you do your just to finish the ITB point, I mean there is a part of your quadriceps that runs kind of almost on the edge, because I mean you feel your thighs pretty muscular all around, right? And that's actually the thing you're supposed to be rolling when you roll more on your side, I think, not the band itself. So you're not trying to get underneath that big side muscle, as far as I'm aware, to push on any bands or tendons. You are trying to keep it on the big muscle on that's part of your front leg. So that's a fun fact.
I feel like I learned something about foam rolling and also myself.
Yeah, I don't really know. You know, I'm not really qualified to talk about such things, but I'm sure people should consult their physical therapist or what do you call them? Physiotherapist, sorry. Or GP.
Before they do the foam rolling.
Yeah.
Please don't say Alex.
So, well, I heard this thing. It was called Daft Runners, and I thought they sounded like they were sensible and clued up. I was like, no, not really. Like one of our big goals for the year is to dress up as clowns and run around drinking beer for 7 hours. I mean, it's not really who you should be taking your medical advice from, really.
Did the foam rolling help with the beer drinking?
I think it will, almost certainly.
Fair enough.
Because I mean, God knows we're not going to stretch after we finish running, are we? So
no.
Yeah, so there you go. That's foam roller news. What else is going on in the wide world?
Well, I tell you what, one thing I've seen quite a lot recently is all that kind of the shoe nonsense, where they've got the kind of carbon fiber plates added to the shoes, and people So it's actually been relatively interesting because I mean I've always considered, you know, what unethical things can I do to get quicker? I'm talking drugs, I don't know, mechanized suits, anything really that kind of helps with me getting quicker at running.
Mechanized suit.
An exoskeleton. More about that in a second, actually. But so the was it, what are those shoes called again? It's a ridiculous name, isn't it?
I don't know, Vapor or something like that. Is that the one?
The Nike ones. Yeah, so I think Nike just released Air Zoom Alpha Fly.
Oh, right.
I think there's a Vapor Fly one as well, so I think it's a null one. But what do you think, Alex? Because you've never been too fussed about your times. I think I'm a little bit more kind of focused than you are. And would you pay £250 to get some shoes that make you 6% more efficient?
6% more efficient. So, I mean, is that 6% off your time? What's the measure of efficiency of what is that?
Oh, right. So, I mean, I'll probably have to find a little bit of a blurb about the shoes, to be honest with you. But the idea, I think, the carbon fiber is supposed to be quite springy. So, when you're running, it kind of it helps you go quicker. It's more efficient.
On the 6% point, specifically, what is 6% better?
Oh, right. No, I just pulled that figure out the end.
Okay. So if you're 6% more efficient, would your time reduce by 6%? Or would it be a sort of compounding return that, okay, I'm 6% more efficient, therefore my time is going to be 20% better?
Compound interest.
Yeah, exactly.
Love it.
Foam rollers and compound interest. This is the party channel right here.
Yeah, blinding me with math, data, and science. should have known when we started. I should have started throwing kind of amounts I've run at you in terms of information. It's my own fault, isn't it? Can't really complain.
Yeah, I mean, in a short answer, I wouldn't. I mean, looking at these things, I mean, I wore. So I think I mentioned I run in like barefoot shoes. I've tried a pair of barefoot shoes, which they weren't really barefoot. They were zero drop shoes. So when they say zero drop, that's I think it's like basically the angle between your heel and your toe. So if you're stood just barefoot on the floor, that is a zero drop. And but you have shoes where the heel is thicker, and so you'll have a, I think, up to 12 degree drop. And like you buy like some running shoes in the shop that are your basic, whatever your brand of choice is, road running shoes. So I tried, because we started doing the long distances again, I was like, oh, maybe it would help my calf. So I had a little cushioning. So I got some zero drop shoes, but with a thick padding underneath.
Not thick, cool.
But, I mean, thick for me, probably not thick for most people. But I ran in them for 200 yards and felt sick, just not being able to feel the ground underneath me. And it didn't, it actually gave me some horrendous shin splints, which, I mean, you can just run through, I guess. But I basically pulled those things off and ran in my socks back home to get some of the shoes.
Brilliant. So there's a David Goggins coming out there, you know, just running through severe fractured shins.
Yeah.
But I find that kind of curious, that drop, isn't it? So I only really started hearing about the drops and issues relatively recently. I just used buy shoes and kind of cushioned neutral shoes is the kind of the one I go for traditionally. Yeah. So I never even had a trail shoe until last year when I got fed up with falling over all the time when I was doing these runs. I talked to this shop owner about the drop, and apparently shoes, they only started having a kind of difference when I think Nike Air shoes were released about kind of 2-3 decades ago. And apparently in the manufacturing process, they hadn't figured out how to get the air in the front part of the shoe. It was only the back they could do the manufacturing, which is like the only reason there's a drop in the kind of, just because of the Nike Air thing. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because now people will kind of mention that all the time.
I've been suckered into the marketing.
yeah, it's just like a foible of marketing, yeah. But I mean, there's all sorts of stuff people, you know, I guess where it comes to elite runners, those kind of margins really matter, don't they? Like kind of, you know, whatever, 6% or whatever, you know. But I guess where it concerns people like me, you know, doing more training will have a better benefit than buying a pair of shoes.
Yeah, it's probably, yeah, generally better for your health, I guess. Not that we're when we're talking about drinking for 7 hours while running, I'm not sure if that, well, what makes more sense here to actually, well, just take the shortcut and get 6% gain, or or actually take things more seriously and actually look after our bodies.
That sounds like a stupid idea. we should definitely not do that.
Let's get back away from that thought. We've already been talking about yoga and foam rolling.
Yeah. Good. So, I mean,
are we becoming runners? Is this what happens? Are we going to start talking about our freaking splits or something on the 10K run?
You mentioned earlier about vomiting when you were wearing cushioned trail shoes, or I feel similarly nauseous right now thinking about what I'm discussing.
So, this is supposed to just be a joke at channel about, you know, how silly is it to run, and then suddenly we're looking at foam rolling, hot yoga, and there's a guy running marathon times in banana suits, and we're just here, you know, talking about trigonasana. I can't even say those words yet. I'm sure I'll get it, and I'll be. When I say, oh, you can't call it triangle pose. No, it's the proper phrase for it is triangle. Okay, fair enough. Just savasana yourself, somewhere.
Well, let's try and avoid that. Let's not buy the £250 shoes. Let's buy the cheaper version that comes out maybe in a couple of years,
and see how much we can destroy ourselves.
Exactly.
For the entertainment of everyone else.
Indeed. But things, all these shoes look really stupid. I mean, I'm looking at the kind of the pictures of them. It's like a, not that I care about looking stupid. I look stupid all the time, but they look ridiculous.
I mean, is it just the, because Brooks also do these kind of things now, right?
Yeah. They just released the Hyperion Elite, which again is a curious name.
Yeah.
So apparently, so again, it's got all these runners. They've used the shoes and they cross quicker. You know, they do these marathon times. And apparently they use these shoes are race shoes as well. So not specifically meant for training. You wear them on the occasion you do a race.
So what? So you with the Nike ones, you're supposed to just use them for training?
No. Apparently, says they wear out quite quickly. The carbon fiber does, apparently, according to something I read on the internet. So you literally
it runs like out quickly. So use it for training, and then just keep buying more of them. And then on race day, you know, just be you. Is that their advice?
No. So it's the opposite. It's more you wear other shoes for training, and then you wear the special kind of £250 shoes for the race day.
Sorry, I thought you meant that the Brooks ones were designed to be race day ones. And yep. I was like, oh, okay, fair enough.
Yep. So, which is a strange concept because, like, again, I've got one pair of running shoes at a time, which I wear for everything, or maybe some trail shoes as well. And it just seems a bit ridiculous having the race day shoes. Maybe I have like a 5K shoe, a 10K shoe, and a brisk walking around shoe.
Yeah, I've got my shoe for terrain where it's hard, dry tarmac, one where it's slightly damp, humid tarmac. One for its, you know, Death Valley tarmac, where it's just going to melt anyway.
Oh, that's brilliant! So, like an F1 race, you can kind of go into the staging area and change to your soft tires.
Yeah, you basically, yeah, they have like a recumbent bike thing or a stretcher deck. Then you run in, and they run behind you and scoop you up. You have two guys that like take off your shoes, and two more guys come in behind them and put in new shoes, and they tip you up, and you have to start running.
That sounds terrifying and hilarious at the same time.
There we go. So that's a race idea there.
Definitely. So the another thing on that kind of subject is the shoes. Is again, yeah, there's all sorts of things about doping and so on, and people could have. Obviously, testing is a lot better nowadays, so people are getting caught out a bit. I mean, there's a kind of real chance that, say, you weren't very good at running at all. If you had all these advantages, you had the shoes, and then you suddenly kind of doped up massively over a period of time. I was watching another thing, is that this really impressively, and this is not a moment for levity, but there's a paralyzed man who had apparently broken a world record for completing a marathon. So he was wearing an exoskeleton suit, which is really impressive.
The Edge of Tomorrow type exoskeleton suit.
Yeah, I suppose less military than that, but okay. he's got a proper kind of, you know, suit helps him walk, and he's got some crutches.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yes, yeah, so it's Adam Gulitsky, and he's paralyzed after a car accident. He completed this marathon wearing this exoskeleton. It's 33 hours it took him. But I mean, that's pretty. It's pretty impressive. Fair play to him. But
I'm going to Google this as exoskeleton. Marathon. The thing got retyped. Exoskeleton. Marathon. No, I just realized it was in the wrong browser. Now it's gonna bing me. Okay. Okay. Yeah, it looks slightly less military than. And it's pretty crazy though. So he's paralyzed from the waist down.
Yeah.
Wowzer. That's
That's fair play to him. Really impressive.
Yeah, definitely.
So I just can imagine, like, imagine you had the shoes, and then if one of us able-bodied had an exoskeleton suit, you could do a pretty quick run, I reckon. Pretty quick.
I mean, it's. I guess you have to turbocharge that, just to do those massive leaps that Tom. I was going to say Tom Hanks. Sorry, Tom Cruise. Does in The Edge of Tomorrow.
Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks would be a great, great person to. He should have definitely. Imagine that videos of Tom Hanks running.
he might be in the. I think they did that. It was called Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. Yeah, fair point. I just remember all the sections. You've got the videos on YouTube of Tom Cruise running in his movies where he's kind of always running. Yeah. But you're right. Yeah, Tom Hanks did do a lot of running as well.
Ooh, hang on, this has forwarded me onto another link about what I should eat for a long run. So, what should I eat before? Well, when I don't really eat breakfast. apparently, okay, so according to, this is Runner's World, should eat 200 to 300 calories in a pre-run breakfast.
Yeah, man.
3-to-1 carb protein. So, I mean, I think I would have probably hit that with my peanut butter sandwich.
Nice.
There we go. How long does the run need to be before I feel the night before? Does anything longer than 90 minutes, you need to think about getting carbs in your system the night before. Okay. I'm never really that concerned about it because I eat so much anyway. It's like, well, yeah, the likelihood of me being under-carbed the night before anything is extremely low.
It's like, has it ever happened?
I've never known it to happen. I've never been there the next day and be like, oh, you know what? I didn't eat enough yesterday.
Oh, those carbs. Those carbs. So undercarbed. I can't possibly do any running. Not enough carbs.
So I'm just... I'm down the standard rabbit hole of the internet. And, now it's like carb loading research. It was a technique developed in the late 60s. So 3-to-4 depletion days, they called it, involving 3-to-4 days of hard training plus a low carb diet. Found that 2 days of carb loading with a tapered training program, particularly in last 1-to-2. Okay.
Does that stuff make any sense? Is that kind of? I mean, it sounds like there's science behind it, but
It's kind of odd. So it's in carb loading research. Technique was originally developed, as I just kind of read. So depletion phase, 3-to-4 days of hard training plus a low carbohydrate diet. Very unpleasant phase to do and was not always proven to help performance as it was damaging psychologically. It's like,
Wow.
So more modern research has found that 2 days of carb loading with tapered training program, particularly in the last 1-to-4 days beforehand, is sufficient to boost glycogen levels. And that entire paragraph doesn't make sense to me. Because it's like, well, so talking in the first part about a depletion phase where it's hard training, low carb. It's kind of like, well, this is completely, what's this about?
What about the study group, I guess? Was it like 5 or 10 people? Were they elite athletes? You know, were they average runners?
There's all sorts of facts, isn't it? The article, Jamie, they haven't even bothered to do that. No, I do like Runner's World. I'm just not denigrating this particular article. I just found that a bit confusing. What are we talking about? Does carbohydrate loading improve performance? Muscle glycogen levels are normally in the range of 100 to 120. Carbohydrate loading enables glycogen levels to be increased to 150 to 200 mmol per kilo net weight. It is estimated that this additional amount of muscle glycogen can improve endurance by 2-3%. So, I eat a lot of carbs beforehand. I'm not sure actually that. I mean, I don't think I'd even notice a 2-3% improvement. I mean, most of the time, I'm waiting for you to eat your pork pie.
You're welcome.
Definitely. I think it's all much a muchness to worry about this, really, isn't it? It's 2-3%, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, need bigger gains than that. Need some big, massive gains. Not 2-3%.
I mean, it's all these small percentages, but I mean, I'm going to improve my performance by 50%. I don't think so. But if I added them all together, okay, if I just carb loaded right, if I just lost weight, if I just had a healthy diet, if I just, oh, damn, hang on. I'd actually be an athlete. Oh, yeah, I would.
I know that bombshell.
Yeah. If you want to actually be an athlete, then you should live and train like an athlete and eat like an athlete. But you'll have no friends. No, athletes have plenty of friends. It's a joke.
I don't know. I don't know any. I'm not friends with any athletes apart from you, obviously. No.
I mean, imagine they sit around all day talking about foam rolling, right?
Yeah, running form.
the recovery days. We just talked about all those things. Oh, God. Jamie, are we athletes? Are we athletes? Tell me we're not.
Do you eat avo on toast? I think that makes you an athlete, I'm not sure.
Does it? I really like it. I'm impressed. Oh no.
You're an athlete. You're a millennial athlete.
Millennial. Yeah. I was eating guacamole before it was cool. I avocados before I even knew guacamole had avocados in them. There we go.
Oh, practically Mexican.
Yes, exactly. I like spicy food and all kinds of things. Right, I'm going to stop going down here because the next article was about a hard-boiled egg hack. Just like, hang on, what? And then this is going to turn into the time you ate a load of 3-week-old eggs.
Oh God! Then, please don't. Yeah. Let's not go there. No.
Close the browser. Just close the browser. No, is there anything else that's cropped in the news? I mean, apart from my wandering around the internet there.
No, right. I think it's a good update. I think we've kind of covered the training. Probably have to do some more training. We can talk about how we trained or didn't train next week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We probably should find something to talk about that isn't about running on this running podcast, because otherwise it's going to sound too serious, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. All right, I'll think of some amusing running anecdotes to cover next time. I might make something up. I'll make some science up.
Make science. Yes. That's it. Defraud the entire internet. Fake news is where it's at.
They all deserve it.
Awesome. Okay, thanks everyone for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed our rambling and got actually some useful advice that you probably shouldn't take and consult a physician about or a dietitian or whatever it is we're talking about. So from us, I guess that's ciao for now.
Ciao.